Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Chris Jackson. So, Fred, what makes a good design review?
Well, I'm glad you asked that. That was a little bit of a trite setup there, because I just told you I got a question this morning from somebody on LinkedIn. I think it was on LinkedIn. So what makes a good design review? Which is a great question. And I know you recently wrote and posted an article on design reviews, which I think my feedback to you on the article was good subheadings. I think you're getting this SEO stuff going good. So my design review of your article was you're getting better at using SEO techniques to help people understand it. So that's cool. But design reviews, they're all over the map. I know I years ago, I knew a guy that worked in the nuclear industry and was, you know, part and parcel to designing elements of nuclear power plants. And at the time, he was really hopeful that they would be a bust out of all these new nuclear systems around the world. And I haven't talked to him in 20 years. So I don't know that's really happening, but for him, it was a professional engineer essentially redesigns the system and compares notes with the original design. And then they go over at excruciating detail of decision-making of why this is sized this way or how much heat transfer, what assumptions were made. And it takes months and months and months to complete a review of, say, one pump kind of thing. That's kind of the one end of the design review spectrum I've seen. And then you mentioned the other end of the spectrum in the, it's death by PowerPoint. And here's all the things we did and all the accomplishments. And we hit all these milestones and we used 15 different pens and 16 colors. And we drew circles and arrows and we have diagrams and, oh, and here's a flow chart. You got to consider the process. And they just blather on with meaningless, trivial stuff of how great they are. And that's not a design review.
No, and there's one fundamental underlying reason for that happening. And that is that people treat design reviews incorrectly as activities or conversations where we're trying to confirm that we meet requirements. And that might sound noble. That might sound what we're supposed like. That might sound like something we're supposed to be doing. But in practice, we don't ever fundamentally meet our requirements until the very last design review. So if we have 10 design reviews, the first 9, by definition, we haven't met requirements.
Right.
And that then devolves into a discussion about us being, dare I say, on track. And how do we allocate if we're on track? Well, it's very difficult if you don't have a strategy or a plan. And the next step that happens once we have that framework of inefficiency established is that engineers turn up and they feel like the only thing they can do is to convince everyone else in the room that they've been working very, very hard. And that's where we get 300 slide PowerPoint presentations where they go over every single incremental design improvement or what Joe down the test lab has uncovered over last week, a list of open action items in font that's too small, because they don't have any formal framework that tells them what needs to be in that design review discussion before they turn up. And so it just turns into this massive spectacle of effort versus outcomes.
Yeah.
And instead, if we have design reviews which come back to what they're supposed to be doing, which is to improve design, to make awesome designs, we don't worry about requirements because we're worrying about making amazing and awesome designs. And by definition, we will meet requirements once we come up with an awesome design. But if we just focus on this binary, yes, no, our requirements met, it almost certainly devolves into those excruciating design reviews where everyone turns up with absolutely everything ready to be presented on.
Yeah, you know, I had a touch of one of these really nice, really good design reviews. And part of it was, is this electrical engineer that was leading the design of this main circuit board was confident enough with his own capabilities to come into the design review, even a week prior, we would get a packet, basically, all the people that were invited to the review. And it was, you know, other electrical engineers from other programs that brought a different trained eye, the quality reliability folks, a handful of other folks, but it was very select who was invited. And then he would send the question. It was like, here's three things I'm having trouble with. I need some ideas. I need some input. I need some how to reframe this. So he kind of set us up to come into the design review with the welcoming of, it's not just be critical and add to your list of things to do. It's to help why do we also agree that that's troublesome? Or here's another way to look at it. Have you considered, you know, these kind? And then, so for an hour meeting, we would go 2.5-3 hours, and it was better than a brainstorm. It wasn't just a bunch of ideas. It wasn't just piling on bad ideas. It was, let's explore this in detail. Have you thought about it? He would walk away with, all right, I think we have a plan to solve this one and this one. Those are great ideas. We got to go check this, this, and this. And these three, we're still working. We're going to run some experiments. It was an actionable list of either completed decisions or, you know, things we needed to go do in the next couple of days to solve the remaining problems. And they were phenomenal. Yeah. But once it got out of his hands, then it was... the only reason you went was because there was pizza or donuts or something.
Right. And as you just sort of described, you have a discussion which is set up to try and improve designs. At no stage did you say, did you describe a scenario where someone's just trying to check that their design meets requirements? No, they're saying, look, our design essentially sucks in these areas. We want it to be awesome. Can you help me make it awesome? And when that happens, we walk out of those meetings and it just feels empowering, amazing, tremendous. We're all on the same team, spirit of core, leadership, all those wonderful things. And
well, the key point though, Chris, and I think you're touching on it in what you're talking about, is that you need to be safe to do that, to be vulnerable, right, to say, hey, this is a part I'm struggling with. This is a part I'm in charge of designing, but I'm not sure. I got too many options here and I don't think any of them are working. I need some other people to present, you know, to take a look at it and let's talk about it. Which means, hey, I'm not the expert. And that's key.
And there's two parts to that. So yes, engineers need to be, and I'll write this in the article, be vulnerable, not defensive. And that means that when your man said, hey, here's the three things I'm having issues with, that is the epitome of vulnerability in a healthy way. Saying, look, I don't have the answers. I need some help. Maybe I'm just too close to the problem. And even if I am smarter than you guys, because you guys are further away, you might see it from a different perspective. That is vulnerability.
Right.
But the other word you mentioned is safety or safe. And that comes down to leadership, because if the people who are in the design reviews, the leaders or the managers of that discussion, if they allow it to degenerate into a hole picking exercise where someone's trying to pick holes with what you've done, then that creates a culture of defensiveness. People feel like they're under attack. People are being exposed, for lack of a better term. And so it comes back to the person who's running this design review strategy, is to allow people to feel not only safe when they're being vulnerable, but feel like they've been rewarded. And they feel rewarded when they go into this conversation, be vulnerable, everyone helps them, and they walk away with some really great ideas, because at the end of the day, that engineer who was vulnerable will be the one who receives the accolades when that component, that pump, that power supply is more reliable than anybody else's.
Yep. Yeah, that was one of the things Ed always insisted on, no managers. He was brilliant that way.
Right.
Because they were looking for, well, what did you do? You know, did you do this? Did you do this? Did you do this? And they wanted what have you been doing for the last 2 weeks? Justify yourself. How come you haven't solved this? You know, it was questions like that, which are destructive for that ability to say, hey, this one isn't trading off correctly here. We need to sort it out and be vulnerable with it and look for the assistance and other visions of it. Yeah, in that same group, we had a bunch of us that were working with these different teams, and it was more of a design for manufacturing, design for reliability type role we had. Every Friday, we would get together, and it was two different teams, one for the consumer lines and one for the commercial lines. And we were all working on different projects, different product lines. So once a week, we got together because we're all doing essentially the same job. And we had two rules. No managers, no agenda. Because we were tired of it. Because everything else we did that had any managers in it, it was just tedious. And so we would get together and we would just, what's on your mind? Let's put it up on the board. And all right. And it's like, you know, that topic there looks like a good one. Let's talk about that. And we got more done and more, you know, guidelines and consistency across our products and work, because we're all working with the same production lines and types of equipment and same vendors. We got so much done and it was so productive. And it was one of the other engineers that basically facilitated it. And it was, we avoided getting in rabbit holes. We just got into the details as much as we needed to. We'd set up action items. And every now and then our boss, the boss I had in my group, would stick his head in there and we'd all shut up and say, all right, it's time for you to leave. Because he would just destroy it, absolutely destroy it. So he actually felt the pressure of it at one point and hired a consultant to find out why he wasn't gelling with the rest of the team. And they did a Myers-Briggs. This is completely off topic, but we did a Myers-Briggs. There's eight of us in the group, including the manager. Seven of us were on like the upper right-hand corner of whatever grid she was showing us. And he was on the lower left-hand corner. He was intuitive and touchy-feely and a person. And we were all hardcore engineers, introverts, and complete opposite. And so she looked at us and goes, well, I think the results speak for themselves. You're just not one of them. So we gave him a hard time for the rest of the year, and then he left and went to Intel.
Right. Well, so, anyway. I mean, you are ragging on managers a little bit, but I have experienced managers who have been part of design reviews, but they've been brought in because they represent expertise.
Right.
And as opposed to being there with a management hat on, they come with their own experiences in solving similar problems. And when they come with that hat on, they're very, very useful.
Yeah.
The manager I think you're talking about is that manager who just comes in, doesn't really know the ins and outs, the physical problems of the design challenges that the young engineer is talking about. And so to feel like they're involved, part of the conversation, they'll say flippant things like, have you considered this? Have you checked this? But most of the time, they'll say, are we on track? Are we on track? Are we on track? Are we okay? Are we going to meet this? Are we going to do it? No, hey, we are going to be on track if we are able to solve this problem. We're going to be on track if we make this design amazing as quickly as possible. And you're right, managers who come in with a management hat on just destroy these design reviews, and they typically make it or turn it into those discussions where the poor young engineer feels like they're going to have everything picked to death. They turn up with 3,000 PowerPoint slides to suffocate all those in the room with idols of effort. And nothing gets happened.
You know you're in a bad design review when they say, please hold all questions and comments till the end.
Yeah,
and you get 2 minutes and you're done. You're out of there.
Yeah. And so those design reviews are essentially where managers who don't spend enough time, interacting with the designers, the technicians, the engineers, they don't know what the issues are at the coalface. They're too busy, you know, doing budget meetings this and, you know, preparing reports for that, like for that person over there. And they get panicked and they need to feel assured that things are on track. So they turn up to these design reviews en masse, and all they want to hear is some reassuring words that the young engineers are on top of everything. But in practice, those young engineers, they are the ones who feel suffocated because they need to convince these bosses that they are working really, really, really hard, because, again, we can't say that we've met requirements until the final design review. And then it turns into a free-for-all where people are trying to pick holes, and it's just messy. But if you have design review team who aren't necessarily the senior people in the organization, but are there to try and help those engineers who have to come to the party by being vulnerable and admitting that they might not have all the best answers themselves. That's when you get those amazing results and those managers can sleep a lot easier. So it comes down to we use this word a lot, Fred, but it comes down to the culture of the organization.
Yep.
It's a really big point for design reviews, or good ones.
Well, now to me, to answer that question of what makes a good design review is we outline that it's the elements of saying, hey, this is a part that we need to focus on and saying it's not quite right yet. We need to solve it. That, I think, is the purpose of it. Now, there's other purposes of design reviews. There's like you said, you come down to the final design review. Are we good enough to ship? At the end of that review process, we need to determine, are we ready to go to production or not? Right. And there's a major decision online there. And I've seen design reviews like that, when it's presented as, instead of here's all the things we got, here's the three key risk areas, and here's what we know and don't know. And all right, over to you, big boss, to make this decision. It's your butts on the line. Here's what we know and don't know. Here's how best we can inform you. If you're not comfortable with taking that risk, then we're not done yet, you know? But instead we bury it under, we've ticked these 8,000 boxes, and here's why we ticked them, and they're all good. And we kind of gloss, oh, and there's three things here that we need to, you know, consider, but it looks like we're out of time and the pizza's getting cold. So let's move on.
Well, I mean, to answer our friend's question, which was what makes a design review awesome, essentially. Yep. I mean, I think it fundamentally comes down to some really key points. First and foremost is an awesome design review is all about helping create awesome designs, improving designs. So if anything else sucks the oxygen from that design review team to the extent that we don't actually focus on improving design, then you have a bad design review. So to our friends, sit down and brainstorm all the activities you would like to see in a design review discussion, which would ultimately have the best impact on design. That includes that. I would dare say that brainstorming session would come up with ideas like making sure that the reviewers are the right people, not the managers, the way you talk about, Fred,
yep.
Not necessarily the buddies of the designers themselves, but people who have been genuinely sought out and selected based on their expertise and experiences so that they would add value to that discussion. And those people need to be prepared. They need to have time set aside. They need to have information forwarded to them beforehand. They can't just see the design the very first time the design review. No, they need to see all the design and all the supporting information before they turn up so they're ready to go. The other thing that we talked about, again, in that hypothetical brainstorming session to create those wonderful design review activities is to make sure that everyone feels like they should be vulnerable. Vulnerability is a good thing because vulnerability means you put your ego at the door or check your ego at the door and ask for help or ask for ideas. And once you have those key ingredients, then you start seeing a really good design review behavior or culture. But it comes down to the people who are going to run it. They're the ones who need to make sure that everyone is focused on talking about nothing besides improving the design or making an amazing design. They're the ones who need to make those young engineers feel safe when they are vulnerable. The leaders of these design reviews need to say, hey, manager, you haven't prepared. You haven't read any of the documentation. You aren't an expert in this field. Get out. You're not here to help. You're here to check. Go away. That's not helpful. And of course, you talked about actionable items. One of the biggest issues I've seen in what could have otherwise been really good design reviews is that people didn't take notes. And even though we have really good discussions about what we can do to improve design, it's just so much that unfortunately, despite best efforts, we don't remember that. So we need to have a scribe or a secretary who is authorized to stop the discussion and say, hey, that point you just raised, I don't fully understand it. Can you please say that slower so I can write it down in a way that we can then go and check later on?
And that was one of the things Ed would use as a trigger to say, all right, I think the discussion's good on this. here's the action item. Here's the next step. He would use terms mm-hmm. like that. And, you know, Bill, you're going to go do this and then get that information to me. You know, Sarah, you're going to run this experiment or I'm going to use this, you know, approach to this design and we'll explore it later. It was mm-hmm. always here's a action item type thing. And it would be somebody's going to go do something by some point in time. And it was not a long list usually. But yeah, you're exactly right. It's one thing to go and see a bunch of slides and say, oh yeah, we need to look at that. Like, all right, which we are you talking about here? You know, is it the royal we, or are you pointing at me? Kind of thing.
And that leader, the person chairing the design review committee, he or she needs to also be brave enough to tell that young engineer who sent up with 300 PowerPoint slides to say, hey, love your effort. 378 PowerPoint slides, that would have taken you 3 weeks to get to put together. Let's not talk about that. What are the four things or five things that are going to keep you up at night in regards to making an awesome design?
Yep.
Let's talk about them. And that is a very powerful statement because it says the engineer, we don't value your PowerPoint skills and we don't value we don't value anything that is all about bureaucracy unless that effort somehow supports improved designs.
Yep.
So I think it really does come down to how the organization communicates what design reviews are all about and then enforces those key principles.
So one last point here is, you've used, you know, design review committee or group, I mean, it sounds almost formal. And I think there is a role mm-hmm. for formal reviews and especially for, you know, key elements of a major design. It makes sense to solicit the expertise and get people gathered and prepped and all those elements we've talked about. Yet I also think that an indicator that you've got the right culture is that engineer is working on something and goes, hey, Sarah, can you take a look at this? You know, just the informal stuff and the same elements there saying, hey, man, I'm working on a couple ideas here, but it's just not coming together. What do you think? And I think that is an indication of a good design review. It doesn't have to be plotted out and formal and get all the right experts. And I think there's a role for that. And there's a great value in doing those. But I think the the ongoing discussion saying, hey, could you take a look at this? Or how would you approach this kind of problem? Or those kind of discussions also have an immense amount of value. But it's when every engineer is in their cube doing their own solutions and doesn't talk to anybody else until they're done with all their 378 PowerPoint slides. I think they're missing a opportunity of why they often co-locate similar engineering teams together. go talk to these folks.
Well, I mean, let's be honest. Every second we spend at work when we're designing something new is design review. You're just reviewing your own design. You're coming up with your new design. So you've got your first blueprint out and you say, you know what, that's not going to work. I can do better over here. That is individual design review and it's very healthy. We are never not doing design reviews when we're designing something from scratch. So I completely agree. We need to remind ourselves that design review is actually there as an important part of the designer's toolbox. It's not there to make the customer happy. We make the customer happy by giving them an awesome design. But if we focus on templated and scheduled out design reviews, they can again devolve into those sessions where people feel like they're on the defensive. They're trying to have holes picked in their narrative, and it's just not healthy.
Exactly.
I also really advocate, and this is what a lot of people tend to struggle with, I really advocate putting the requirements on hold. Most design reviews always talk about, are we meeting requirements? And again, you can't meet your requirements until your final design. The requirements are implicit in the design effort. If we make an amazing design, then we're going to meet requirements. But if we just continually talk about requirements, 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 this binary yes, no conversation, every single step of the way, the answer is always going to be no. And even though we think we're talking about meeting requirements, we fill that up with, again, those 378 PowerPoint slides. So The designers know what the requirements are. And yes, there may be one or two really important ones which you might feel like you need to continually remind people about, but at the end of the day, the requirements are implicit in the design efforts. And shelve conversations about requirements until the end. And perhaps if you do want to talk about requirements for your own sanity as a manager, as a boss, do it informally. Walk over to that cubicle and just, you know, talk to that person one-on-one in a safe environment. And don't rely on that design review discussion that to make your troubles disappear.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, if you're listening to this and going, have you experienced great design reviews or dismal ones? Maybe you had my same manager at one point. We talked about a couple elements that make it really key. Now, we didn't get into, and it's probably a subject for further discussion, is, well, how do you create that environment? How do you create this circumstance? So some of the steps in more detail on that. But I think first we should just ask our listeners is, you know, what makes the difference that in enabling these really good design reviews? And I'm sure many of you have experienced them on occasion, but how do you tip that so that that's the norm and not the exception? How do you get there? And design reviews is a broad topic for lots and lots of people, so I'm sure we're missing mm-hmm. some elements of this. So we'd love to hear from you. Head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. And there we've added a SpeakPipe widget that allows you to actually record comments or questions to us that we could certainly then use to kick off and add you to the conversation in a future podcast. There's a comment form there. We do get most of our feedback at the moment through LinkedIn or through direct contact through our About pages. So whatever works for you, but we would sincerely like to include you in the conversation. So we look forward to your feedback. And if you've got any or ideas of how to improve the podcast, that would be great too.
We need to be vulnerable, don't we, Fred?
Yeah, we need to maybe get a consortium. Maybe we can get, what's the Rogan? It's like the number one podcast with like 6 million followers or something like that.
The Joe Rogan Experience.
Yeah, the Joe Rogan Experience. Maybe get him to do a quick review for us and give us some pointers. Are you going to make the slides?
Yes. 378 slides of awesome.
There you go. Well, Chris, I'll let you get on to the rest of the day. I've got a bunch of work to do. Before the end of the day. As for listeners, please add to your list a action item of, you know, send us some feedback, join the conversation. We'd love to hear from you. So with that, Chris, have a great rest of your day. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks, Fred. Same to you.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.